And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. I'm coming up this weekend, September 16th and 17th at Northwestern State University. It's the 8th annual Louisiana Studies Conference with the theme this year of Sacred Louisiana, a presentation of creative and scholarly works. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are Shane Rasmussen, the director of the Louisiana Folklife Center and also an associate professor of English at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches. And he is joined here by Matt Perry, the director of the film Lighten Up, and his collaborator and co-conspirator, David Steele. They're in the studio with me right now. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
All right, so let's get started with the overview. This year's theme, Shane, is Sacred Louisiana. Can you give us a description of what Sacred Louisiana means?
You know, I was primarily curious. How do people conceive of Louisiana when they talk about what's sacred? Mm-hmm. You know, because we have such a diverse population. We have so many people that are doing just things all around the state that and sometimes they talk to each other, sometimes it's ecumenical, and sometimes it's just their own kind of niche. And I wondered also, when you have scholars but also creative folks like Matt and David, what are they thinking about when they're thinking? How are they envisioning that sacredness? So, and I was interested, you know, from everything from Louisiana saints or miracles to mythic Louisiana, you know, preaching styles or preserving that which is sacred, sacred heritage, to folk congregations or for example, sacred music. And, you know, that I didn't know what I would get, but we got just a cornucopia. It just poured in of all these folks that clearly were really passionate about their research into what makes Louisiana such a spiritual state.
Yeah, the whole concept of microcultures for me. So in Creole culture, I'm sure there are certain customs and other things that have been passed down for so long that they have become sort of that you don't mess with them because you're messing with a part of history
right now,
you know.
Right.
Within this state, there's a lot of microcosms.
And you know, that is so true. That I'm so glad you hit on that, because it's not just what happens in church.
Right.
It's not just what happens in a sacred space like
we
a cathedral.
Feel in our heart.
Yeah. I mean, gumbo is pretty sacred to some people.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't cook it right, they're going to let you know.
For good reason, because it's so good. And they have, but also they have, think of all the memories that they have.
Right. Oh, yes. Exactly.
You know, if a storm is coming in, you make a gumbo.
Uh-huh.
You know, it lasts and it's just, it warms the soul. It gives you a sense of security. It's who made that gumbo for you. You know, your mother, your grandmother, who taught her to make it. And you ate it around people, you know, during a time, for example, maybe at the Mardi Gras, for example, where they have the community gumbo cook-off.
Right.
And it's a sign of community.
Exactly.
You know, or a church will have a gumbo cook-off. So you have all these different associations. And what most people, what some folks, maybe outside of Louisiana, might see as secular, actually become sacred here.
And that's the way really tradition, sacred culture and traditions get started.
Exactly.
Mostly for me, at least from my mindset, it has to do with long-term memories, you know. Something that I remember from a childhood that always comforted me will become a sacred artifact in my own life. Now, whether I pass that on to my children and it spreads out is different. But for me, it means something very dear and personal.
Right.
Whereas for anybody else, it doesn't.
Well, what so much of the sacred to me is you become something, part of something larger than yourself.
Right.
And that's why parents want to pass it on, because they want their children to be engaged in something, to find meaning in something outside of just their own individuality, so that they can be outward-centered rather than inward-centered.
Right. So let's go through some of the topics here. You've got sacred landscapes.
You bet. Well, you know, one of my favorite scholars is Lisa Kirby. She studies working-class culture and working class people. And she is going to do something on swamp culture and swamp people, not necessarily the show, but right. how those people are envisioned and how they envision themselves and maybe the disconnect sometimes and how these people see the swamp as their place.
Right.
It's a place where they came out of. It's not necessarily exotic to them. It's home. And so it becomes the familiar becomes that which is sacred, because this is their home turf. This is how they make a living. This is how they support their families. This is what means something to them in the long term, in the long run. And so they want to preserve it. And so in a sense, that speaks to me as a folklorist, because I want to valorize that which the kind of vernacular living and culture right. of ordinary people.
Re-envisioning history. This is another one that kind of tweaked me. So what are we re-envisioning? Is this about new discoveries, new letters, new things that open up insights?
Well, you know, Jody Cummings has this great paper and presentation on what it means to teach the legacy of slavery in New Orleans, Louisiana versus Salem, Massachusetts. And one of her key insights is that perhaps it was that the folks up in Salem were practicing something that was akin to maybe some voodoo. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily witchcraft, so to speak, as we may conceive of it, especially in Louisiana. But in Salem, what did those people know about that?
Right.
You know, they were not able to interpret that, and they just kind of instantly it came to these big assumptions that got the ball rolling in a rather unfortunate way. And so she's going to really kind of, or for example, Daphne Koontz is coming from Amsterdam, and she's going to talk about Marie Laveau, how she was not necessarily so much a person that was took in individual clients, but saw herself as sort of a medium between the larger community,
mm-hmm.
and spoke for people as a whole. So her sense of mission was bigger and maybe more noble than people are aware of at first glance.
So now let's go on. You've got Louisiana letters, Louisiana musical history, and Creole, and food culture, which obviously, you know,
right.
and really anywhere you go in the United States, there is an endemic food culture.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly people want to talk about that because there are so many other markers in addition to food. I mean, you know, we have people that are going to talk about the food, the importance of food in divine events. You know, whether it's going to be, the kinds of pies that people make or the kinds of, sharing of foods after the service, mm-hmm. because that's a big deal in the right. South. You know, I mean, a lot of Baptists, they understand that. And those, you know, they know how to cook, and that's a big deal, after church, because that's a sense of community. They come together, they share.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the heart of what they're doing in the chapel, just as much as what they might be doing laid out somewhere out in the foyer of the yard.
So now, once again, this year you're holding an essay contest for high school students. What
you
are
bet.
Their subject matters? What were they entitled to write about?
Well, this year our theme was the Louisiana Inspirations. They answered the prompt, what experience in Louisiana has inspired you the most? And it was just great to see, you know, so many folks come out of the woodwork, all these students from all around the state, you know, as they came forward. And they, you know, the biggest thing was gratitude.
Yeah.
The biggest thing was gratitude. They were so grateful for their challenges, you know, having to overcome some of the challenges because it made them who they are, or they appreciated those people that came before them. A lot of things about grandmothers, a lot of things about invisible fathers who they don't see during the day, but they get older, they get to be about 16, 17, and suddenly they realize how hard dad is working for
right,
them,
yeah.
for the whole family, the sacrifices he's making they don't acknowledge or understand.
It's like the foundation under your feet. You don't pay attention to
right,
it a lot of times.
Right,
yeah.
A lot of things about coaches.
Okay.
You know, when it came to sports, people were inspired, but they were more inspired by that person that helped them run track and told them what it meant to make sacrifices. They're more inspired by that person who said, hey, look, you know, this is cool what you're doing on the field, but you need to be in the classroom just as much to make that happen so that you can be an all-around person and have a future that's going to be more holistic than just the sport. And they showed a lot of gratitude for that.
Yeah.
And I was just so touched by that. And, you know, and sports figures that inspired them with positive examples.
So now we'll get a presentation of some of these, or just the winners, because you're going to be announcing the winners, are you not?
You bet. And we have some of the winners coming in, and they're going to read their essays.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, whether about their experiences, how they, when they went hunting with their father, they realized who their father really was.
Right.
And that's how they bonded. Even though he was a man of few words, they can see the tenacity and the grit and the know-how
right.
out in the woods that he showed them. Or for example, a lot of pride of the state.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the part about the uniqueness of the state, how what some people will be turned off by, you know, well, you live in a state with alligators, because they don't understand that. And they don't understand that, you know, that it's not something to be afraid of. In fact, it's a cool, colorful thing in a better state that is just, you know, and they taste good, too. And they were, and these people,
they teach you boundaries, that's for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of these students are from way out in the woods.
Yeah.
And they know what it's like to kind of live, kind of cohabitate, you know. So it's neat to see the passion that young people have for their state.
Absolutely. So now let's get down to the two key things. We've got a keynote address on Friday night and on Saturday night. We're going to come up with Matt and David here in a minute. But give me a brief synopsis. This title struck me, Spiritual Ya-Ya. Now, I'm a fan of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood. I thought that was a brilliantly done movie.
Yeah.
And so, and I understand now, being in the state, what it means to puddle all summer long. So, spiritual tourism through New Orleans and southern Louisiana. Share some thoughts on this whole topic.
Well, there's a fantastic freelance photographer in New Orleans, Mary Lou Uttermullen, and she's going to come up on Friday and speak to us. And she's got an exhibit right now at NSU that is part of the conference, and you can see her photos.
Okay.
And what she did, Ya-Ya comes from the Yoruba, from meaning divine. What she did was she went all around the greater New Orleans area, and she took pictures of people in every kind of congregation she could find. And so she has Santeria, she has Voodoo, she has people like the Ordo Templi Orientis, and of course she has Catholic and Protestant groups. So and as well as some kind of folks that you wouldn't kind of expect to have public, but. What happened was she kind of let them know that she was sincere. Yeah. She wanted to know about them as much as she wanted to photograph them.
Right.
She wanted to do it in a respectful manner. And so people, they accepted her, they trust her, they let her in. You know, I'm not surprised that some of her other work was with homeless folks.
Right.
That she really had to break down some barriers to gain
empathy,
trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she paints them with her photographs as humans, you know, that are just like you and I, that are having a challenge right now, that are down on their luck. But, you know, she is just so empathetic and so great. But at the same time shows us some of the challenges that they have to face. Mm. And in Spiritual Ya-Ya, it's neat because she shows, you know, evangelicals and healers and folks that are just all the whole spiritual gamut, landscape, you might say, of what's going on down south in New Orleans. And it's just her photos, you got to see them to believe them.
Yeah, I'm going to have to come down and see that. So that sounds exciting. And now we get to our other two guests. You have done a movie called Lighten Up. Now, are you really telling us all to lighten up, or is this a subliminal title?
Well, it's both. Yes, it is actually both. No, but Lighten Up, it's more of sort of a multimedia production. There's elements of film that use sort of documentary techniques,
right,
but in more of sort of an avant-garde way. The films that we'll be seeing at the conference are actually all Louisiana-based. The show itself, Lighten Up, is a documentary sort of meets Fantasia that explores the lives of what some people might call outsider artists in the American South. These artists are often found going through their lives, and sometime around middle age, they have a divine vision that changes the course of their lives. They become artists. They start to recreate these visions in all of these really interesting ways, sort of like building a stairway to heaven in their front yard. And so to sort of stay within the theme of Sacred Louisiana, we have some films that are highlighting some artists in Montgomery, Louisiana. Juanita Leonard, the artist and healer that's based there, is in several of these pieces. We also go to New Orleans, where we filmed in the abandoned Six Flags theme park that's been abandoned 11 years since Hurricane Katrina. And all of them, although they take place sort of all over the South, Mississippi and Texas, really some of the most powerful pieces from the entire show are the Louisiana pieces. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be doing a talk on this, and what are you going to be kind of explaining to us about Lighten Up?
It'll be a presentation showing the films.
Okay.
They're sort of like music videos,
right,
in a way. So I'll be explaining sort of the adventure research part.
The subtext and
right,
all of that.
Behind,
right,
behind the making of it, within the context. And then David here is actually a performer in the show, so I think he'll be...
So what's your role in the Saturday night presentation?
Well, I think... You know, one of the most amazing things about Lighten Up is that it's not only about these visionary artists, but there's a response, you know, from an artist's perspective, from Matt and I and Eve's perspective, that I think is just as powerful. And so, you know, I find it interesting to speak on and take note of the response that comes from these artists, you know, from us. So, you know, for me as a performer in the show, you know, you go on this really interesting journey, if you will, emotionally and I think spiritually as well. And I think, you know, I think that's important. I find that fascinating, too. I mean, every time you do the show, you go on that journey.
Yeah, it's a different experience with each re-envisioning of the show.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know, a lot of times when you're in the audience, you don't understand that. But
Right. Every
performance is a little bit different.
Oh,
and
Yeah. Everyone
has its highs and lows in different places. And Yeah. Everyone brings out a slightly different nuance in you in understanding.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. So let's go on then, Shane. You've got some other material here, and one of them that really struck me was Why Religion Matters More Than Spirituality in Walker Percy's Louisiana.
Yeah.
So can you kind of just give me maybe a little insight into that?
Well, there's a difference between religion and spirituality. And I think that, you know, a lot of folks, I think it's increasing right now. And in fact, if you go to the Pew Research, you know, studies that you can get online, for example,
Right. They've
done a lot of continuing demographic studies of what people are doing when they say, I'm religious or I'm spiritual but not religious.
Right.
As in, there's a differentiation between those things. And so you have, I guess, someone that's a bit more conservative, like Percy, who's basically saying, what happens if we have that divide? And what happens with people when you have that divide? And do you need the institutional authority? Do you need some sort of backdrop that's authoritative, like the Catholic Church?
Right.
Do you need this institutionalized version of religion to give your, in a sense, your spirituality substance? Or can you do away with that? And I think he's talking about that kind of tension that people are having, because a lot of people, as they become almost, you might say, unchurched, as a word Right. Some people have used, you know, what are they experiencing when that happens? Are they as fulfilled? Are they more fulfilled?
Yeah.
And I think he's trying to explore that question in his fiction, which is, you know, I think Percy was always someone who, throughout his oeuvre, you know, you might say, was always challenging readers to ask the hard questions of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the heart of it.
Okay.
You know, what he's trying to do is he's trying to get us to say, well, this is where I'm at. And, you know, trying to have some recognition or understanding of ourselves, which is what literature tries to do at its best anyway.
Right.
So. What does Hamlet do but try to get you to say, okay, where am I at?
Yeah, exactly.
What am I hesitating about?
Right.
What do I need to reconsider on my own life?
Mm-hmm.
What am I waiting to do that I should have done long ago?
Which basically I do every morning when I wake up. So, you know, so I spend 20 minutes saying, what am I doing? Who am I? Why am I here? You know, so.
You're let alone.
So let's go on. The final one is the influence of gospel music in rural Louisiana. Now,
yeah.
I am a big fan of old-time gospel music, all the way from Appalachian gospel music to, of course, Southern
Right. Black
culture gospel music.
But, you know, but what happens when you look at the history of gospel music and, you know, that at first was not fully accepted,
mm-hmm.
you know, where people weren't quite sure. I remember Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby at first would not take any money for singing any of his religious songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, even including those that had to do with Christmas.
Oh, okay.
He wouldn't accept money because he just felt it was inappropriate. He said, I'm a pop singer. I shouldn't accept money for in a sense, singing about that which is sacred.
Right.
And you know, people had historically this kind of sense that, you know, gospel music as we know it, you know, where you bring out the drums, where you bring out a guitar, right. which is, wow, that's a little similar to the blues now.
Yeah.
A little uncertain what I think about this. And, you know, a lot of the same backbeat and some of the same organ chords, you know, right. or, you know, you could be playing those like on a guitar out down at the stoop. And so what do you do now? But gradually it gained this acceptance.
Well, and you've got sacred steel traditions now all throughout right. the South. And, you know, Ray Charles was one of those early ones who kind of blended gospel and blues.
And now it's fully accepted, I
right.
think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got gospel shows all over the country
right, right.
that, you know, that
and,
play.
And as a recording industry phenomenon, it's huge. And
oh,
people
yeah.
don't question it.
Right.
You know, but there was some suspicion and mm-hmm. some unease
sure.
at first. And so and they're going to talk about it at the conference, you know. You know, I want to end also with a bang. You know, Ed Huey. Mm-hmm. is going to be, who is a fantastic blues musician. He's going to perform at
oh, okay.
the conference. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's going to play in his harmonica, and he's going to play the different kind of gospel songs that and secular songs that that emanate from the South and Louisiana.
Yeah.
So, and that's and he is so good at getting across why music is important, and he does that by never is shy about playing it.
All right.
And
well.
So he's going to mix that right in.
So any final thoughts you guys want to share just to kind of wrap this up and get folks out to this conference?
Well, I want to remind everyone that this is a conference that's free.
Yeah.
It's free and open to the public. We want you to realize that at the end of every panel, there's 15 minutes for Q&A, and we heartily encourage
right.
members of the community who know sometimes more about these things than the academics because they're involved in them
or
themselves.
Or can bring a local perspective
exactly.
and a local, you know, maybe something, a nuance that was missed by
yeah.
the scholarly work but needs to be part of that scholarly work
and
of the future.
Let their view inform that scholarly work as it goes forward.
Absolutely.
A conference is not about what you've written. It's about what you're in the process of writing.
Right. And process of learning, which is
exactly.
the ongoing process.
Right, right. So, you know, cultural authorities from all throughout Louisiana, we invite you to take part in this conference. It's free. It's open to the public. And you know, if you go to the Louisiana Folklife Center website, the program is online in its entirety, so you can see what you might want to come and see.
All right. So, Shane, Matt, and David, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Phil.
That was Shane Rasmussen, the director of the Louisiana Folklife Center and an associate professor of English at Northwestern State University in Natchitoches. And he joined me along with Matt Perry, director of the film Lighten Up, and his collaborator David Steele. They were in our Knoll Foundation studio today to talk about the 8th Annual Louisiana Studies Conference, which takes place this weekend, Friday, September 16th and Saturday, September 17th. At Northwestern State University. You can find more information about this conference at Louisiana Folklife on the web at louisianafolklife.nsula.edu, or you can call the center at 318-357-4332. That's 318-357-4332. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.
'Cause you know all my friends, they all laughing me. 'Cause they won't, 'cause they won't.